Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Crimes, Killers, Cults,
and Beer.
And beer.
Or in my case, rum in a powder blue sippy cup because I didn't make it to the store. I took a nap.
In my case, Bud Light in my brown bottle.
In the brown glass.
Yeah. So just two crazy Florida men drinking beer, talking about true crime. Because doesn't it work better that way? I mean,
yeah, right?
Just two crazy Florida men. And we're talking about something crazy that happened in Florida today. But anyway, that's Todd.
And that's Bill. And away we go.
Away we go. Don't really have much ado. I mean, I could bitch about some things, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I already did.
Yeah. We did that off camera.
Yeah. So.
Oh, wait. I have some ado.
Okay. Oh, holy crap. Todd's got ado.
Yeah, and it's going to be kind of funny because of when this is actually going to come out. But so, my band played, but for you will be this past Saturday. So if you were there, hopefully I met you, and hopefully I buy you a beer. Cheers. Oh yeah, we played at the Beach Shack too in Cocoa Beach. So like I said, if you were there, hopefully you came up and talked to me, and I bought you a beer. Nice meeting you. Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I just thought, never mind. Rolling.
Yeah. So what we're doing today, we did this. It's the same thing that we did with the Mad Dog Marvin Albert Pruitt episode. Mad Dog. We found it on the, when we did the Last Meal episode, and we closed with Mad Dog. And we're like, you know what? We're going to do him at some point. And we're talking like some point soon. And we're talking on that episode, like we're going to do it, you know, a few weeks, a month later or whatever. And we wound up doing it the very next week.
Yes.
Well, we're doing that same thing again, because last week on the Prison Tender episode, we talked about Danny Rolling.
Prison
and we
tender.
Said probably about a month and a half later.
Yeah.
Instead, we're doing it the very next week.
Yep, the very next week. Here we go.
But when we get to the part about Sandra London and all that, and this episode, I'm just going to tell you to go listen to the Prison Tender episode. Because that segment by itself about Danny Rolling and Sandra London was about 30 minutes long just on that.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Anyway.
So anyway, Danny Rolling, he was born May 26, 1954 in Shreveport, Louisiana. He was later known as the Gainesville Ripper because of the way that he decimated his victims and displayed them, reminiscent of what Jack the Ripper had done to his victims.
Oh, all right.
His father, a Shreveport cop named James, he was an abusive prick.
His father was a cop. Holy shit.
Well, his father wasn't much better than him.
Well, you know what I mean, though.
Yeah. There's a lot of backstory here, and it all sucks. But it's a Shreveport cop named James, and he was an abusive prick who would routinely beat Danny. But he wasn't the only one. His mother, Claudia, who James had married in 1953 when she was only 19, and also Danny's younger brother, Kevin, they were all getting beat up by this prick. And it could be for anything. Could be for literally anything.
He was James, one of those.
Yeah. James would invent things to punish them for. One time, James said that the way that Danny was breathing was disrespecting him.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So, I mean, so you just, he just obviously liked to beat on people.
Yeah. But James was beating Claudia within weeks of their marriage, and she also found out that she was pregnant 2 weeks into the marriage, but that didn't stop the beatings. And when Danny was born, the delivery was very difficult, and they had to break out the salad spoons. Do we have tongs?
Fuck, salad spoons. Oh, my God. All right.
Got him right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate. Fuck, dude. All right.
If you don't know what we're talking about the stand-up comedy bit that Bill Cosby did, Bill Cosby himself.
Yeah. And, before we found out what a piece of shit Bill Cosby is.
Right. And the thing is, Mark and I were discussing this on, I think it was the episode that I did on their show with them. But Bill Cosby himself holds up.
It does.
Big time.
I mean, you know, even though he's a fucking drug user, uses drugs to rape women, but yeah, but you know, whatever. There's just that.
The content and the performance and the deliveries.
Yes. I remember watching that show when they first put it out, like on HBO or whatever, dude. And I just laughed my ass off. It was friggin' hilarious. I mean, the guy was funny, but damn, did he turn out to be an evil bastard.
Yeah, I know. And that was a rough one for me.
I know, right?
It's like, he wrote the book Fatherhood.
Yes, he did. You know what I mean? Yeah, it did. Yeah, dude, that's like, how does this even happen? You know what I mean? It's like, dude, this guy was like a hero of mine, like an idol, you know? He was funny, and dude, he did Fat Albert, for Christ's sake.
I know.
And here he is, drugging women to have sex with them, dude. Okay, whatever.
But they had to use forceps to pull Danny out.
Yes.
The first time. The salad tongs. Or spoons. Break out the salad spoons. I can do a lot of impersonations and voices, but I can't do Bill Cosby.
Yeah. It's probably a good thing.
The first time James beat Danny was when he was crawling around.
James, you're crawling too loud, kid. Shut up.
Pretty much. James didn't like the way he was crawling, so he beat Danny for it.
Because you do that to a baby.
I don't like how you're crawling. And he just,
Jesus.
Go. Mommy boopy. Shut up, kid.
Again, the fucking baby, dude. What the fuck? Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah. But
this one's going to break me, I can tell.
But after the birth of Kevin, James escalated his abuse on Danny. Fuck you, Kevin. Danny, come over here so I can bitch slap you.
Shit. Oh. If your name is Kevin, I'm sorry. I apologize.
James one time sent Claudia to the hospital with deep cuts that she said that James had made her do to herself. And skipping forward, you know, she might have. What she meant is she drove him to do it, or he drove her to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Because she did attempt suicide several times. So that I think that's what she meant by made him do it. But all of this, and James is a cop.
And he's a cop.
Yeah.
Intrigued. I mean, not Dallas.
But how many times do you think that he was called to a domestic situation where there was abuse going on and had to intervene and arrest, like, the husband or the boyfriend or whatever for doing the exact same shit that he was doing? Maybe not even as bad as the shit that he was doing, but he would still arrest somebody. That makes him a fucking hypocrite, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, Claudia tried multiple times to leave James, but she would ultimately always come back. And of course she would get beaten for leaving.
Yes.
And one time she was gone for 6 months, but James begged her to come back. He'd change and blah, blah, blah. And she finally did. And nothing changed.
Nothing changed. It never changes. Jesus. No.
If you're in an abusive relationship, just get the fuck out.
Yes. Run.
Cause it's not going to change. The only way it's going to change is if your abusive husband has an accident similar to like what happened to Henry Lee Lucas's dad, you know, and his legs get cut off in the train. you know, by a train or something.
Officer, I don't know what happened. He just fell on that knife 27 times. I don't know. He kept getting up and falling back down on it. I don't know what happened.
One time James tackled Danny and cuffed him and had actual cops take him away because he was embarrassed by Danny.
Oh.
He repeatedly told Danny that he was worthless and he never wanted him to be born in the first place. He basically saying, he's not saying, I wish I had never had you. He's like, I wish Claudia had aborted you. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, right? Holy crap.
Another time, Danny had kind of taken in a stray dog.
Oh, come on now. Are we going there?
James beat the family, you know, beat the dog so frequently that it died, and Danny happened holding it when the dog died. And we're done with it. All of this was before Danny turned 13, and he never stood a chance. This is completely nurture.
Well, yeah. man, all right. And the worst part about it is the fucking cop doing it.
Yeah. Living in Columbus, anyway. Georgia, Claudia left James again because of his violent behavior, and they eventually got back together and moved back to Shreveport.
Of course they did.
Claudia later admitted in court that Danny was suffering physical abuse at least once or twice a week at the hands of his father. And and on top of that, the children weren't allowed to have birthdays or holidays. And it wasn't because of some religious reason. It was just because Janny's a fucking dick. Did I say Janny?
You did.
James is a fucking dick, Janny.
Jesus. Oh, my God, dude.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because you said it wasn't for, so they weren't Mormons.
Right.
And we're coming after you too, Mormons. Don't worry.
Or Faith Assembly.
Yeah, you know.
But because the violence was so bad, Claudia left James again with both boys and the fuck did I type here?
I have no idea.
It says she packed the Christmas tree in the car and left, but she did not stay gone long. That had to have been autocorrected.
I hope so.
There's nothing about a Christmas tree in the closest thing.
Yeah, you
about
just said they couldn't celebrate Christmas.
No, I said they weren't allowed to have birthdays or holidays. I didn't say Christmas.
And Christmas is a holiday, son.
Yeah, but the computer doesn't know that.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
It's not going to autocorrect. Just because I wrote holiday, it's not going to autocorrect something with, you know.
Well, what did you write something close to Christmas that it may like?
She packed the kids. She packed the kids in the car and left. That's what I thought that I had written. Or tight.
And what did it say? It said
packed the Christmas tree in the car and left.
Yeah, maybe like, I don't know. Maybe when you type kids, you added a letter or something that you didn't know about, and it did its best guess. Fuck, dude, it's all fucking AI now. Anyway, dude, we are quickly approaching Skynet, and we're about to be destroyed, and I cannot fucking wait.
But she didn't stay gone long, and this is just a vicious cycle over and over and over again. In 1963, Claudia suffered from a nervous breakdown. Danny failed, you know, because Danny had failed the third grade for repeatedly missing school due to illness.
Illness, okay.
Yeah, a.k.a. bruises.
A.k.a. he was having the shit beat out of him by his fucking piece of shit cop dad.
Yeah. School counselors just described Danny as suffering from an inferiority complex with aggressive tendencies and poor impulse control.
You think?
Yeah.
I mean, how else is he going to end up? Jesus.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, it's not, we don't feel sorry for the person he became. We feel sorry for
the child
that he was. Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, like, seriously, what else, I mean, God damn. What else is going to happen when you get treated like that, dude?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, I know a lot of people get treated like that and they grow up completely normal people. But, God damn.
Mm-hmm. But some people, you know, he may have had brain damage from the day that he came out of Claudia because of the salad spoons.
The salad spoons. Oh, God. Fucking salad spoons.
So, it was recommended that Danny receive counseling, but he never did. And Claudia again left with the boys, but she went back to James 2 weeks later. And Danny was a creative guy, and he began to use his artistic abilities to cheer his mother up. You know, he would draw things and, you know, pictures and stuff like that. You know, he hadn't picked up a guitar yet, but we're getting there. But he also used his artistic abilities to create his own little world where everything was peachy.
That's understandable.
Indeed. But one time, James tried to teach the boys how to drive, and James slapped Danny in the face and berated him for not knowing how to use a clutch.
You're just automatically supposed to know how to do that.
Danny was 11.
And automatically was, pun intended, not intended, I don't know. if you know, you know.
Yeah. But Danny was 11, and he failed the third grade again. But during this time, Claudia had left James once again, and Danny begged his mother not to return home. But she did, and Danny one time walked in on his parents having an argument, and his mother had slit her wrist with a razor and then locked herself in the bathroom. James kicked the door down and continued to argue and pummel Claudia. And
She's bleeding to death.
While she's bleeding out, yeah.
Brilliant.
She didn't die. But you know, Danny just watched his mother just on the floor bleeding. She was admitted to a hospital. Danny tried to stop his father from berating his mother, and in return, he was beaten for interfering.
Of course.
And what the fuck do these people? I mean, what makes you think that you have the fucking right to treat another human being that way? Yeah, we said this on another episode about something else and everything, but I'm glad I can't figure that out.
Hopefully y'all have been listening and you'll know what episode it is.
Yeah.
Leave a comment.
Yeah.
No shit, dude. Fuck.
Danny started learning how to play guitar and he would sing his prayers out. But he also started to fantasize about sadistic violence, and the fantasies became more sexually violent. And Danny began to have, he also discovered alcohol. And
yay, alcohol.
Became a very young alcoholic.
Didn't we all?
Yeah, well, I think he was like 13. But yeah, he would steal the alcohol or get it from friends. Before I continue, sources for this one, there's a bunch of them. Let's see, radford.edu. They did a timeline. Tampa Bay Times, ABC7.com, biography.com, WUFT.org, crimelibrary.org and abc30.com.
Crime Larry.
Crime Larry.
That's great.
We did an episode about him. Crime Larry?
Yeah, we did, didn't we?
We did two episodes about Crime Larry. We actually did three because one of them was a two-parter. And then the other Larry was our most listened to episode, which we can't figure out why. Larry.
No shit. Hey.
But we'll ain't complaining, it. Though. Yeah.
No, I ain't no complaining at all. We're just a little confused, but not complaining.
Larry Hall.
Yes.
He was definitely a crime Larry.
But, definitely a crime Larry.
But James beat Danny for not getting a haircut for school one time. And he beat him. He beat him with a belt buckle and then shaved his head. And as a result, he got bullied and hazed for that in the school, you know, because he was bald with probably had some bruises on his head too.
Yeah, with a belt buckle, yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, or cuts. But and at one point, shortly after that, James the cop attempted to kill Claudia. He didn't succeed. This guy,
how did he? Never mind.
You know what?
I know how he became a cop. Never mind.
If you didn't know anything about this story going into it, you would think that the serial killer would be James.
Right?
But
dude, I don't know. Maybe through all the beatings, there was a little essence transfer, and that's how Danny became the serial killer.
Yeah.
You know, dude, I don't mean to bring up like supernatural shit because we ain't about that, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. But one time James found him drinking with a friend, and Danny was dragged home by the neck and then thrown in jail for 2 weeks. This is when he cuffed him and had police officers actually come in and arrest him.
Oh, okay. Instead of beating him, he actually had him arrested.
Well, he probably beat him too.
Yeah, what was I thinking?
I had to put a little bit more pressure on your arm than I would have liked to.
Yeah. Stop resisting, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Dude, cops are going to hate us now. We're so fucked.
Well, I mean, in all honesty.
Well, not in this case, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, this.
Oh, because, dude, we always end up talking bad about police, even though it's the police that this particular police that was doing a bad thing.
Right. This is the bad apple that gives the rest of them a bad name.
Yeah. But, yeah, dude, we're definitely fucking like. Treading that thin blue line very precariously.
We need to have Wayne Ivey and Grady Judd on together and
just to show you guys that we love cops. We don't hate cops. We hate incompetent police and people and right. Police that, like he said, the bad examples.
Yeah.
We don't hate all police. But it sure does seem like it.
I know Grady Judd will do an interview. I know Grady Judd will do an interview.
I bet Ivy would too.
Dude, let's work on that. You work on I'll just work on both of them.
You do it because you got you have the ability to convince them to do it. I do not.
Oh man,
I do not have that ability. That is not one of my
because they. I mean, attribute. they're cut from the same cloth. Wayne Ivy and Grady Judd. And I think it would be interesting to have them on and bounce stories off of each other.
Yeah, I think that would be
an awesome episode.
Yeah, dude, if we can pull that shit off, let's do it. If we can't, then I mean, shit, Ivy can come over to my house and sit here with me, dude. I'll set up another mic, and me and him will just sit here.
Well, Grady Judd could come over here.
You know what I mean, dude? If they don't have a way to do this, which, I mean, I don't know if they do or not. But, yeah, dude, if they could, you know, dude. You know, fucking Sheriff Ivy could fucking show up over my house. Come on over, bro. We'll fucking sit and chill.
Grady Judd will have such a good time over here that that at the end of it, he'll be like, you know what? I'm going to pay for that road of yours to be leveled. That road sucks.
That road does suck going to your house, bro.
It does suck. It's horrible.
But dude, that time I came over there for the Super Bowl, I'm glad I drove the truck. Because if I'd have drove my Honda, dude, I wouldn't have a Honda anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean that road makes
that road would have destroyed my little fucking sporty Honda, dude. It would have just ripped all the undercarriage out of it.
At this point, Danny kind of started distancing himself from his mother. Yeah, because she keeps going back, and he's tired of getting the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, can you blame him?
Understandable. Yeah.
Fuck, poor kid. You know, like I said, poor kid, not for what he became.
Right. But he grabbed a backpack and ran away from home, and he spent his first night nearby in the woods, and he jerked off to fantasies about killing people and controlling them, or maybe I should say controlling people and then killing them. Unless he used them as puppets.
Either way.
But then later on, as all, you know, young teenagers do with their runaway, when do they come home?
When they're hungry and broke.
Yep, when their stomach starts growling.
It's like, fuck, this living on my own ain't all it's cracked up to be.
Nope.
Where's my food? How come I haven't had lunch yet?
So another time, Danny and Kevin were handcuffed to the floor because they didn't cut the grass as well as James would have liked. And while their father knelt on their chests and everything, Danny pleaded with him to stop, and they threatened to kill himself. Apparently that worked for a short time. I mean, he had already run away. But
usually when you got a sadistic motherfucker like that, and you got, well, I'll just kill myself, and he'll be like, go ahead,
do it.
I didn't want you anyway.
Right.
Damn. How the fuck did, okay, whatever. It worked. All right.
So in 1968, Danny saw a naked girl for the first time and began, you know, peeking through the neighbor's bathroom window. And he was caught twice by the neighbors. And so he's starting to kind of spiral here at this point.
Yep. It's all downhill from here.
Yep. James caught Danny and he beat him to the ground. And this time Danny actually did attempt suicide, but he failed.
Failed miserably.
He began having dreams of people beating and torturing him with demons going through him. And Danny was thrown out of his home by James after a fight over whether or not he could wear jeans to church. And I'm surprised that James doesn't even burst into a freaking ball of flame just when he walks into a church.
Yeah, right.
So Danny was thrown out of the house by his father. But Claudia would sneak him back in at night after James had passed out and gone to sleep, just so that he could actually get some get some rest.
Of course.
In 1969, Danny got a guitar for Christmas, and he taught himself how to play and write his own songs. So kind of like the same basic little shit that we did, you know.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere.
Right. So he got a job at Dairy Queen, which he had to quit a week after because his father made him because Danny's grades had dropped. And at this point, he was becoming even more dark and aggressive.
Oh.
So 1970, Danny was thrown in jail after James caught him drinking with a neighbor. Again.
Okay.
1971, he began, you know, killing random animals. And he was arrested yet again for intoxication. Later in 1971, Danny threatened his father that if he didn't sign him up for the Navy, he would run away from home, this time for good. You know, and he had dropped out of high school at this point, but he had gotten his GED. And James agreed, like, get your stupid ass out of my hair. He was like 16 or 17 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And you, I don't know if it's still this way now, but back then you could join at like 16 if, you know, your parents signed off on it.
I think it's, I mean, I don't know about today, but
it was like that for a long time. I don't know if it's still
I think like when I was that age, I think that was still a thing. Yeah. I mean, they'll take anybody. I'm sure they'll take anybody now because nobody wants to join the military anymore because
you're right.
They'd rather sit in their mom's basement wearing a diaper pretending that they're a unicorn that farts sprinkles and being social justice warriors. But I didn't say that out loud.
And we wrote down our names and added 2 years to our ages.
Wow, that was the best forward-speaking Yoda I've ever heard.
That was Joaquin from Sabaton.
Yeah, but you sounded like Yoda speaking normally.
Sounded like Yoda, I did not.
Sounded like Yoda, you did.
So James agreed, but Danny failed the enlistment test for the Navy, so he wound up joining the Air Force instead. He was stationed at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, and he worked security police and Strategic Air Command. He worked security police there at Lackland, and then he switched to Homestead Air Force Base in Florida, where he got into Strategic Air Command. But while there in Homestead, I've been there, by the way.
Yeah, of course you have. What's the roads, Bill? Lame the roads. Come on, you know you can.
I-95, the turnpike. No, it's not on the, not 95. Turnpike. US 1.
Yeah. Dude, turnpike and US. Oh, yeah, okay.
It's the turnpike and US 1. Not.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got you.
US 1 goes all the way to the end of Key West.
I know.
But.
Well, it does, but once you get around like Fort Lauderdale, it's all under construction and it just takes you like weird directions and gets you lost.
Well, that's where you take the turnpike down to Florida City, which is just north of Homestead.
Because, you know, maps doesn't like to let you take back roads. Maps likes you to take the fastest route possible.
Right. But while they're at Homestead, he tripped on acid over 100 times and did other drugs as well. 100 fucking times tripping on acid and like a
yeah.
He done.
Yes. Yes, he is.
In 1972, he was locked up for, you know, for drug possession and for disobeying orders. And he lost his rank at that time that he was a private first class. So he lost that stripe. So now he's just a private. Oh, an airman first class. Same thing as airman a private. But he lost the stripe. So he was just an airman now at that point. He was diagnosed as a psychiatrist as having behavioral personality disorder, BPD. And despite all that, somehow he managed to get an honorable discharge.
Okay. Of course he did, because why the hell not? That.
Yeah, didn't...
Well, dude, I don't understand how he couldn't pass the Navy fucking entrance test, but he got into the Air Force.
I know, because both the Navy and the Air Force are, like, harder to get into by way of the test than the Marines or the Army.
Okay. I don't know about that, but I'm just...
No, it's true.
I'm just saying, I don't know. But what I don't understand is like, dude, if you can't pass the test to get into one branch, how do you pass the test to get to another one?
Well, I think the Navy is the hardest one to get into. But, you know, loose lips sink ships and all.
In the Navy, you can sail the seven seas.
But
honestly, I'm going to make a joke now. So please, Navy, don't hate me because I'm sure you've heard this before. But like, How hard is it to become a seaman?
Just a few strokes.
Yeah, just a few strokes. Anyway, go Navy.
Damn. So, and shortly after he was honorably discharged, he lost his virginity while tripping balls, but he said that he regretted it the next morning. And you know what? I don't know, but yeah, I've never done acid before, but I'd like to think that sex when you're doing when you're tripping on acid would be pretty fucking cool.
You know,
I've never done acid before, but I don't know. It just from everything that I've heard about acid, I think having sex while you're tripping balls would be fucking fun.
Yeah, maybe. unless you start having like weird hallucinations and the girl you're banging turns into some kind of tentacle beast. Oh wait, no, I'm sorry, that's anime. Never mind. That's not acid. That's a completely different thing.
Well, but you could see it. You could see it materialize in front of you, I guess. I don't know, but it just.
Dude, I never hallucinated. All the times I did acid, I never hallucinated.
Oh.
All the colors were like really vibrant, but that's about it.
I don't know. I'm not going to try it because
I wouldn't do any drugs nowadays because you never know what's got fentanyl in it.
But even back, I mean, I've had opportunity to do every drug that there fucking is because it was always around me, you know, back when we were, you know, back in the, 90s and everything. It was always there. I mean, I've been sitting 3 feet away from somebody fucking mainlining heroin. I mean, it's just, you know, I've seen people snort cocaine right next to me. I've seen, you know, one time I was at this party, there was this dude like totally tripping balls and he was hallucinating. So you might call me a dick for doing this. No pun intended. It's a house party. So I go to the refrigerator. They've got some hot dogs in there. I grab a hot dog and I kind of unzip my pants a little bit and I put the hot dog like it's.
Yeah.
Like, so I walked up to him. I'm like, dude, he's like, dude, man, get your dick away from me, man. I said, okay. So I took the hot dog away from my pants and I stuck it in my mouth and I bit it in half and I spit out the other half.
Yeah.
And he just started freaking out. He's like, dude, you just bit your dick off, man.
Oh, those were the days. Anywho, now that we've totally gone off the rails, let's try to find the tracks and get back on this story.
But after leaving the Air Force, he returned to live with his grandfather in Shreveport. Can't say I blame him.
Right.
And he began getting involved with the church, and he met a girl named Ann Halko. And he actually thought that God had given her to him. Not like led him to her, given her to him. Like, she's his property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they were married, and they were married because Anna had gotten pregnant. And Danny was working.
You're going to marry my daughter, boy.
But Danny had started working two jobs, but he also started drinking and doing drugs again. And he started threatening Ann, and he left the church, and he would run off for days at a time, like all these serial killers do. They all just, like, leave for days at a time and everything.
Yeah.
And Ann had no idea where he was. And
of course not. He was doing. I always see the future.
Yeah. He got caught peeping into a woman's window, and he was returned home by police, and he put a knife to Anne's neck when she tried to call his parents.
Ooh.
Later, he quit his job, and Anne once again called his parents, and James came over and put a knife to Danny's throat.
Okay, see? Now that is appropriate.
Agreed. But still, when you think about it, it's James's fault. You know?
Yes, no, it is, totally, but you don't do that. I mean, you don't do what James did either, but in that particular situation, him showing up and putting a knife to his throat, like, see, how do you like it, you fucking fuck?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But no, granted, this whole situation is his father's fault. Absolutely. Right. But like I said, in that one particular instance, that was appropriate.
Agreed. So at this point, Danny claimed that he saw UFO demons, Jesus, and ghosts. So and I'm thinking maybe Marshall Applewhite should have recruited Danny.
Fuck yeah. Then Danny could have just done it and been gone, and we wouldn't even be having this story.
Right. Anyway, put a knife in that.
Oh, fuck. Here we go. All right. Knife's in it.
Finally, in 1977, Ann said that she was going to leave Danny, and she had been having an affair with her ex-boyfriend, and Danny threatened to kill them both. He didn't kill them, but he did beat both of them up. Ann filed for divorce, and then later, after the divorce, Danny committed his first rape.
Oh, okay.
And it was a woman who looked like Ann.
Of course it was. Jesus Christ.
Later that year, he was in a bad car accident that had killed a woman, and he said that that haunted him for the rest of his life.
Yeah, no, it didn't.
Nah. It might have haunted him up until his first murder.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, we're good.
Oh, no, you know, he saw the girl die and he's like, damn it, dude, I didn't get to do it. So, yeah, that's probably what haunted him.
So in 1978, Danny became suicidal again. But, of course, once again, he couldn't go through with it.
Yeah, because he's a coward.
Also, about that time, he started dating a 17-year-old girl, which was legal at that time in Louisiana. But he was committing multiple robberies.
Louisiana.
Yeah. What's still legal in some states? Hell, in some states, I think 16 is still legal in some states. I'm not sure.
Dude, if the girl's parents don't mind, there ain't no problem with nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Until you break up with her.
Yeah. And then you're fucked. Yeah. Until you do one fucking thing wrong and she tells her daddy, and then you're in jail for the rest of your life.
But he started committing multiple mobberies.
Yeah, we're just going to contract multiple robberies into mobberies from now on. That's what it's going to be. Fuck you. Got you back. All
right. Mobberies. I like it.
I do. We've coined a new term.
Yeah,
that's gonna be a t-shirt.
So
it's just gonna say mobberies across.
So he started committing mobberies, but he was trying to get shot in the process. So hey, Danny,
suicide by cop. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, just go up to a group of cops and pull a gun. That's all you got to do.
Yeah,
you will not survive that.
Yeah. Yeah, they will grant your wish.
Yeah. In 1979, he developed a fixation on Wood Ducky grocery stores.
Wood Ducky. Yeah. Chicago!
He robbed multiple Winn-Dixie locations in episode 3, Wood Ducky.
Yes, you'll get
it. Wood Ducky is Winn-Dixie.
Yes.
Just go listen to episode 3.
I'm but, sure they have, but yeah.
Yeah. But he robbed multiple Winn-Dixie locations in Alabama, Georgia, and Louisiana. And although...
Really? Spoiler, no Piggly Wiggly's?
No. I don't think Piggly Wiggly is that far south.
Oh, yeah, it is.
We don't have any in Florida.
We did.
No, there's some in Georgia. There's some in Georgia. I don't know about Alabama or Louisiana, though.
All right, well... Dude, I'm just, never mind. Maybe it's not as, maybe Piggly Wiggly ain't a thing like it used to be.
Oh, it's big in the Carolinas and Tennessee, but I don't know about the rest of it. But
anyway,
although spoiler alert, it would be the Wood Ducky in Ocala, Florida that would claim revenge
the Wood Ducky
on all of the other Wood Ducky stores. And
hell yeah.
And that's a story that's reminiscent of Richard Ramirez's capture, except with a bunch of cops.
All right.
So put a knife in that too. We'll get there.
God damn it. I'm running out of knives again, dude. I still haven't bought knives.
It's only two knives. So far.
Yeah, dude. Knives are getting scarce.
There was one where I could have.
Because I keep leaving them. You tell me to take, you know, because you never tell me to take the knife out. You hardly ever tell me to take the knife out.
Well, when we get to the spot, you should take it out.
So I keep leaving them. I don't know. No.
But there you know, one part where
new knives are right on my list after phone, t-shirt. Yeah. New phone, yeah. T-shirt, knives.
But there's one point in here where I was going to say put a knife in it, but I'm like, eh, that would not be in good taste.
Well, you've already ruined it now, so you might as well.
But no, I didn't even type it. I was about to, and I was just like, no.
All right. I'll carry on then.
So sorry. Danny was arrested, and he was sentenced to two concurrent six-year sentences. And while in prison, he escaped from a road work gang, and it was a brazen escape filled with incredible bouts of valor and bravery where he wouldn't be seen again until 1990 at the Ocala Wood Ducky.
Wow.
No. He made it 100 yards away and then surrendered after a cop fired a warning shot. I think I just killed Todd.
Wow.
Got him.
Teddy just should have sat there and got to be friends with the warden so he could take old Red.
I like my story better.
No, that was good, dude. Yeah, you got me.
Yeah. In 1984, Danny was released from prison, and he moved back with his parents, but quickly bolted after getting into a fight with James. And in other news, the sky is blue.
Water's wet. BC, yeah. Felt feels. Dice die. That's just the way it is.
Later in 1994, he watched a young woman in her apartment for hours and then broke in.
Hold on, hold on. 94 or 84?
84. Okay.
He just got out in 84 and then you skipped 10 years. I'm like, well, how'd that happen?
Yeah, he's in prison.
He couldn't have laid low for 10 fucking years.
Yeah, he's in prison for, you know, what's coming. Yeah. But he broke in 84. Later in 84, he watched a young woman in her apartment for, excuse me, for hours. And broke in and he was going to rape her, but he said that she was crying and he felt bad. So they just talked and had some coffee and sang songs to each other because remember, he's quite the gifted singer.
Apparently.
Then after this beautiful serenade, they had consensual sex.
Of course they did.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what happened, Danny boy.
Yes, I'm sure.
But in 1986, he cheated on Wood Ducky and robbed a Kroger in Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, shit. Can't be cheating on a Wood Ducky, man.
No. But he was arrested for that, and he was sentenced to 4 years. And he escaped from there simply by walking off of the jail's ground and swimming away in the Snake River. But once again, he was caught.
Oh, yeah, well, of course.
Well, he made it farther this time than he did.
He made it more than 100 yards?
Yeah. No, he actually got away. It took him a couple of days to find him. But in 1980...
Well, he learned then.
In 1998, he was paroled. Or 1988. Why do I keep doing that?
In 1988, I don't know. Maybe you want this story to be over as bad as I do.
Oh, God.
Yeah, here we go.
No more digressions.
Yeah, that's good.
We still got a ways to go.
No.
But skip ahead. I can't.
You skipped ahead last week.
I cut that part out completely because you asked me to.
You know what I mean, though.
But He was, but he, in 1988, he was paroled under, under the conditions that he'd go back to Shreveport. And he was fired for a no call, no show for three consecutive days. But when he came back on the fourth day and was fired, he exploded, threatening to kill the restaurant manager and a cook. And this is where I decided not to say put a knife in it. But and these weren't just idle threats. Yeah. Because during those unexcused absences, he had just made his first kills, a family of three that he had been stalking.
He obviously had not been cooking for very long.
Well, no.
I mean, I've been a cook, chef, whatever you want to call me, for, what is it? 20, going on 24 years. If somebody comes into my kitchen and threatens me, it's like, motherfucker, I have knives. I've got a fryer full of 350-degree oil that I am not afraid to fucking stick a pan in and throw at you. I have I have all means of weapons available to me to end you. Do not come into my restaurant and threaten me, motherfucker. Anyway, that I can't promise that's going to be my last digression, but.
So between 1988 and 1990, Danny went on a string of robberies.
I'm trying to drown myself here. God damn.
He committed mobberies.
More mobberies. All right.
Yeah. And during that time, James had gotten into a fight. You know, he and James had gotten into a fight. And this time, Danny shot James in the stomach and in the forehead.
Oh, just to make sure.
But somehow James survived, although he lost an eye.
I don't understand that. Like, how do you get shot in the head and live?
It was probably a 22 or 25.
Dude, a 22 is the assassin's weapon of choice.
Yeah, but not only if you're up close. What if he was, like, say, 30, 40 feet away?
Then you don't use a 22.
Well, that's how he survived.
I'm just saying. I mean, if it's the only gun you got, it's the only gun you got. But
right.
Anyway. I'm not going to digress again, I promise.
I believe that like I believed it when you say you're going to get a phone tomorrow.
I did. I told you. It's on my list, man.
In June of 1990, Danny broke into the home of a man named Michael Kennedy. He stole two handguns and the ID papers of Michael Kennedy's deceased son, Michael Kennedy Jr., who was around the same age as Danny.
That's convenient.
Yeah, he's gearing up. He has a plan. He then robbed a Western United Superstore twice in 2 weeks, getting almost $4,000 total from them. I'm guessing it's like a Walmart or a Target or a Costco or something like that.
I have no idea, but yeah, it would probably have to be to get that kind of cash. Eesh.
Or that kind of name, Western United Superstore.
Yeah. I mean, dude, it could have been anything. It could have been a check cashing place. You don't know.
In July, he made collect calls from a payphone to police where he boasted about hiding in the woods and evading them because they were after him for the attempted murder on James.
Yeah.
But he had also smoked crack for the first time during that hideout period. And he also made a tape of his manifesto on the first side of the cassette and then some of his music on the B side, which is where it belongs.
All right. But
we'll play one of the songs later. And I got to admit, it's not a bad song, but the one we're going to play after that, it just erases the legitimacy of the first one and we'll get there. But the manifesto says, I'm sending this to you, the three people I love the most. And I always love you. I love my mother. I love my father. I love my brother. And no matter what anybody thinks about this man, Danny Harold Rowling, put a knife in that. I want these people to know that I'm talking right now to know that this is not the road that I really wanted. This is not what I wanted. You just said that. But it is the road that is before me now. You just said that too. And I will walk it like a man. You know, I love you, Pop. And I'm so sorry, Dad. Is it Dad or Pop? It rips my heart out by the roots to think what happened between you and I. You tried to shoot him. You tried to kill him.
And your heart doesn't have roots.
As chambers. Nothing's ever been easy for me. Well, I always wanted to make you proud of me, Dad, but it somehow or another, I always fell short. I promise you this much, no matter what happens on the road ahead of me, at least I'll walk it as a man. I will do that. You already said that. Mom, you're such a precious soul. There ain't a woman on the face of this earth that can cook like you can, sugar. You hear me? Mom, don't blame yourself for anything that's happened. None of this is your fault. I don't really believe that it's anybody's fault. Yeah, it's James's fault. It's just the way things happen sometimes. Sometimes we want so much for things to be right, especially with the ones that we love, but it doesn't always happen that way, does it, Mama? So we have to go on as long as there is breath in our body. We got to go on. What I'm trying to say is after this tape, you're not going to hear anything else from me. Just forget about me. Well, I won't say that because you can't forget your own. I'm just saying that I want you to go on and live your life, and I don't want you to have sleepless nights because of me. You deserved a hell of a lot more than the pain that I brought you. Or the James brought her.
All right.
Kevin, I wanted so much for you and I to strike out together and make a dent in this world and make something out of our lives, but it doesn't always happen that way, does it? And I walked the road that is before me the best I can. You already said that twice. And I prayed, and I've asked God, and I've asked him, dear Lord of heaven, Lord God of heaven and earth, I would rather be judged of you than judged of man. Didn't work out that way, did it? Man does not judge rightfully or justly. What they did for you.
Yes.
Now, this world is corrupt, and so is the system that rose it up, and the system that is the system of the devil. But after recording that first part of the manifest, he then fled to plain old Kansas for a week.
Plain old Kansas. Not our Kansas, but no, regular not our Kansas. But
plain old Kansas. Yeah. we're that's never going away either.
No, that's never going away.
But nothing is known about what he did there, but I'm guessing, this is just me speculating, I'm guessing he was just being seen there to throw law enforcement off, but nothing ever came of it. Nothing was ever brought up about his time in Kansas.
Do you think he was smart enough to run a fucking scam like that?
We don't know why he went to Kansas.
But, you know, I mean, like you said, though, you said that you think he went there, I mean, to, like, throw the scent off the, you know, throw the, whatever, the scent off the trail.
He wasn't super intelligent or anything like some of these serial killers are that are genius level and beyond, but he wasn't stupid either, you know, so, I mean, he could have.
Right. Like, well, no, it's fine, dude. I'm just asking. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, if I go up to Kansas, maybe, you know, I'll be seen there on cameras or something.
If I go to regular Kansas and not our Kansas. Because if I go to our Kansas, I'm fucked.
I'll get put down like that Mad Dog guy.
Yeah. Because, dude, they don't take no shit in our Kansas.
Right. But they do in plain old Kansas.
Yeah, plain old Kansas is a whole different story. Well, fuck my life.
Well, at that time, they hadn't BTK hadn't been caught yet, so it makes sense.
Yeah, why not? Never mind. Just go.
Later in July, he hopped on a Greyhound and went to Sarasota, Florida, and that's when he became Michael Kennedy Jr. He then stole a car and drove to Tampa, where he robbed several houses and convenience stores, and he was sloppy about it. Next, he began the two-hour drive from Tampa to Gainesville, where he set up a campsite 2 miles away from where the murders would take place. it was an area where most of the students at the University of Florida lived. Now, Danny idolized Ted Bundy, like we said in the Prison Tender episode. I think that since Bundy hit Florida State, I think that's why Danny decided to hit the University of Florida. Right. I swear I do. I really do think that that was his mindset.
Oh, seriously, now that you bring that up, I have no doubt. Because he's like, dude, they're going to be looking hard for people at that place because Bundy already been there.
Yeah.
I got to go somewhere else.
No, he just went, I got to do something different than Bundy, so I'm going to hit Florida. I don't want to go up to Florida State and get scalped. I want to go down to University of Florida and get eaten by gators.
Yeah. Well, you know. Dude, I'm not going to do it because I said I wasn't going to digress anymore.
So, but the first thing that he did, I mean, he set up a camp in the woods, like I said. But the first thing that he did was he finished his manifesto. Later that night and everything, he's got his tent set up and everything. He's got some pot. He's got some beer. Got some crack. Got some freaking acid. Got some freaking catnip. But he resumed the tape. And his voice is... His voice is like husky and halting this time. Like, he's like all choppy, but talking gruff and all that stuff because the hunt is on. I'm here now. And according to the research, you can hear crickets in the background, which is so fucking hilarious to me. He's like talking, but he started off with some advice for his brother, Kevin, about how to hunt deer with a bow.
Oh, yeah.
Just make sure that you put on some camouflage, good camouflage, because when you go bow hunting, you've got to have camouflage. And I tell you something else, too. Aim for the lungs. Aim straight through the rib cage, either there or for the heart. Best thing to do is to hit the lung. It's the best... Chirp, 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 chirp. It's the best shot for a deer. Straight through the lungs. He don't go very far after that.
As the tape closes, Rawlings speaks directly to his father and his voice is bitter.
You know, Pop, I don't think you was ever really concerned about the way I felt anyway. Nope, I really don't. You never really take time to listen to me. Never cared about what I thought.
Oh, how does he sound like Dick Darwin?
You tell me, bro. You're the one doing the voice. Fuck.
You never cared about how I felt. Never had daddy that I could go to and confide in my problems. You just pushed me away at my young age, Pop. I guess.
Ribbit. I had to.
I guess you and I—we both missed out on a lot. I wanted to make you proud of me. I let you down. I'm sorry for that. Well, I'm gonna sign off now for a little bit. I got something I gotta do. I love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye. Fuck my life, man. Holy shit.
But even on tape, he doesn't have the fucking balls to go at his dad for the piece of shit that his dad was.
Yeah.
Even on tape, hundreds of miles away.
Well, you know, I mean, that's what second decades of abuse will do to you, I guess.
Yeah, I guess, like, not maybe not Stockholm syndrome, but you know, it's like the victim mentality.
Yeah, which we know all too well today. Anyway.
Yeah. The killings began hours later. August 24th, 1980. 1990. Oh. God, now I'm going back. Now I'm like number dyslexic here. What the fuck?
I don't know.
I've got this written. Every time I've done this, it's been the right year that I had typed there. It's just I'm going back. I'm
yeah.
Freaking dyslexic with the numbers, apparently. August 24th, 1990, Danny broke into the house of two college freshmen armed with an automatic pistol, probably the 22, and a knife. And he covered their mouth, the mouth of Sonja Larsson, Sonja, S-O-N-J-A.
Yes.
Sonja?
Probably Sonja. So J is probably a yuh sound.
Okay.
But it could be Sonja, I don't know.
But he covered her mouth with duct tape and then stabbed her to death, and she was 17. He next taped Christina Powell's mouth together. She was also 17, and bound her hands. He removed her clothes, and he fondled her, and he forced her to go down on him. And then he raped her.
With her mouth duct taped? How does that work?
I'm pretty sure she took the duct tape off at that point. But
see, okay, here now I have to say something about this. Hmm. And dude, if you are like raping someone, why would you stick your dick in their mouth when they could bite it the fuck off?
No kidding.
I mean, dude, I don't care if the motherfucker has a gun, is gonna shoot me. You're gonna die anyway. You have to know that.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Why would you fucking, as the attacker, why would you risk your fucking manhood by doing something like that?
I know. That's crazy.
Anyway. All right.
But he then stabbed her five times, killing her. And then he returned to Sonja's body and he raped her again. And he even cut both girls' nipples off. And he fled their apartment, throwing all the evidence into a dumpster. And while riding away on his bike, he found one of the girls' nipples in his bag.
Now by bike, you mean bicycle, right?
Bicycle, yeah.
Like, how do you just find it? Like, dude, don't you remember doing that?
Maybe he was, I don't know. Maybe he was putting the evidence or whatever into a trash bag, and you know, his bag happened to be underneath it, and
he missed one.
Yeah, could be. I don't know. That's just but this wasn't even his most depraved murder.
I mean, like, what was he gonna do? Take it home and fucking throw it in deep fryer and have nipple chips? I mean, come on.
There are serial killers that have done just that.
I know, but I was thinking more of the Monty Python thing, like ocelot spleens, wolf nipple chips.
So the next night,
yes,
Danny
I
killed
Monty Python into this.
Nee.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
but the next day, Danny killed Christina. Well, the next night, Danny killed Christina Hoyt, 18 years old. He raped her, and he wanted this one to leave a lasting impression. And this is one of the sickest posing that any serial killer has ever done. This is what earned him the Gainesville Ripper name.
Even worse than old HH, who was Jack the Ripper.
He was not Jack the Ripper.
Dude, you know I can't help but fucking say that because you fucking just vehemently deny it.
But this...
Anyway. This
is up there with, I mean, you know, this is Jack the Ripper level right here.
Yeah.
But he decapitated her. And then he posed, you know, after raping her, he decapitated her, and then he posed her body on the bed in a like a sexual pose with her legs spread and her hands like in certain areas. And, yeah. And then, you know, the body was sitting upright. You know, he propped the body up and on the edge of the bed. You know, her nipples were on the bed beside her because he had cut them off. And then he sat her head on a shelf across the room, eyes wide open, and positioned to where it looked like the head was staring directly at the body.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I had... Yeah. Never mind. I've got nothing. I wish I had something to say there, but I just... That's a lot to take in.
Imagine when the cops found that scene.
Yeah, I could imagine there was a lot of what the fuck going on.
And vomiting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that in between vomiting, they were using what the fuck like a comma.
Yeah. And you gotta imagine that the cops that found that scene, he said that girl in the car accident haunted him.
Yeah.
This haunted the police officers that found that scene, I'm sure.
I have little doubt that was recurring nightmares for all of them, yes.
On August 27th, Danny struck again at the home of two 23-year-old University of Florida students, Manuel Tobadada.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. And Tracy Pauls. Manuel, I'll just call him Manuel, he was a former high school football player, and he put up a fight, but Danny was able to subdue him, and he killed him. And he did rape Tracy, but neither of these bodies were mutilated. And that was it. Five people murdered in 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah, by that time, thousands of students had left University of Florida, and women, especially brunettes, because all of the women that he had killed were brunettes. He had a type, kind of like Ted Bundy, like the blondes.
Mm-hmm.
They had been traveling in groups, cohabitating in groups, sleeping in shifts. And 700 of the students, over 700 of the students had left. They didn't come back. Yeah, they enrolled in other colleges, in the area or even different states. I'm not sure if any of them enrolled at FSU. I'm just saying.
It's like, all right, there's two colleges in Florida now that have serial killers tied to them. I want to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Although, if you think about it, it probably wouldn't happen again at Florida State. University of Florida, for that matter.
You never know. I mean, dude, that's the thing, though, dude. You never know. And it's like, dude, I mean, honestly, I don't know. Like, dude, well, I mean, yeah, okay, this guy's there and he's doing this. Like, well, just arm yourself and
be aware, a lot of people,
dude. Don't.
Gun sales skyrocketed during that time as well.
Do not let some fucking sicko fucking rule your life. Don't live in fear. Don't do the things that he does. Don't do the things of the people that, don't be out by yourself. Don't do this. If you're out by yourself, have a fucking gun on you and know how to use. See, owning a gun and knowing how to use a gun are two totally different fucking things. Know how to use a gun, dude. And dude,
have you ever been to Gainesville?
I was there for a minute.
Well, the Best Buy that I deliver to, behind that Best Buy, there's now like a Hobby Lobby and a Lowe's.
Mm-hmm.
That was the spot he was hiding out because it was wooded.
That was his campground.
Yeah, it was wooded at that time. So it's just like, I've been just freaking probably a quarter mile away from where this piece of shit was hiding out.
Wow.
So while in the woods at the campsite, at his campsite, Danny,
behind the Best Buy.
Yeah. I don't think it was a Best Buy then. It might have been. I don't know how long Best Buy has been.
It doesn't matter. It's a Best Buy now because you've been there.
but Danny wasn't alone. There was a homeless man there named Tony Danzy, Danzy.
Hold me closer, Tony Danzy. Got you back.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, everybody. I'm not sorry, but sorry.
Danny had left this man alive for some reason. He hadn't told Danzy about his murders, but for whatever reason, Danny bounced and Danzy said that they had smoked crack together. And Danny, God, this is getting tough. Danzy.
Just say Tony when you're talking about him. Just say Tony, dude. It might make it easier for you.
All right. Danny had told him about the bank robbery that he had committed there in Gainesville just 2 days after the last murder. Danny had told the teller that there better not be a dye pack in the bag.
Yeah, of course.
But what are you going to do if there is? Come back and kill them? Because I seriously doubt it, because at this point the police are already on their way thanks to the silent alarm.
Yeah. Not too smart, this one.
So Danny got away with about $7,000, and he went back to the campsite and opened the bag, and boom! The dye pack went off.
Well, so those dye packs go off in like 30, 40 seconds after you leave
this
the
one
bank,
didn't.
Dude.
This one didn't. It went off when he was opening the bag back at the campsite.
I don't know how long it really takes a dye pack to go off, but it just.
Well, I was under the impression too that it was like immediate, like triggered as soon as you walk through the door, out the door.
I've seen this shit in movies, right, dude? And that shit goes off like quick.
Well, maybe this one was motion detected or whatever.
It was faulty, but it finally went off.
Yeah, that's probably it. I just thought it was weird. But the dye pack went off, so Danny really hauled ass at this point, leaving some items behind that had dye on them. Some of the money. He got the money. Now
he's covered in purple fucking dye. Like, oh, right. Dude, and that shit don't come off, bro. It's like, yeah, we're going to find you now.
But police picked Danzy up shortly later, who spilled the... The police picked Tony up shortly later, who spilled the beans on Danny. He said that Danny had taken his mother-in-law Mona as a hostage and had escaped.
Okay.
Mona?
Yeah, I know, right?
Damn it!
Okay, who's the boss? All right, where's Alyssa Milano at?
Mona! Damn it, I thought I would get you with that one. Fuck!
No, dude. No, I got it, dude. Dude, I'm the one that made Tony Danza joke earlier.
I know, and I was trying to get you back with one, but it failed miserably.
Yeah. Damn it. Because dude, I've already done it, dude. You can't do any who's the boss things or anything else now, dude. I've already done the Tony Danza joke.
But,
and it wasn't even really a Tony Danza joke. It was a Friends joke that I did.
I thought it was an Elton John joke.
Dude, now there's an episode of Friends where, what's her name? Phoebe was playing guitar.
I thought you were spoofing Tiny Dancer.
I am. I was. But it's from Friends.
Oh.
And it is like that. But the whole misheard lyric thing, but it comes from that episode of Friends where Phoebe was playing guitar and she's like, hold me closer, Tony Danza.
Oh, damn.
Instead of Tiny Dancer. So when you said Tony Danzy, I couldn't help it. I had to.
So give yourself a man card punch for admitting that you watch Friends.
Yeah, you know what? You could just have it because I admit that I watch Friends. Just take it from me because I am no longer a man.
It's not because of Bud Light. It's because you admitted that you watch Friends.
Yes.
But
and that very well could be unintentionally the most embarrassing mistake I've ever made in my life.
So I did get you. I did get you. Ha!
You did. I mean, not the way you wanted to, but at the end you did.
This is even better.
Yes.
This is even better.
Yeah, Bill got me to admit that I watched fucking Friends. So yeah, I'm no longer a man. I guess I'm just going to start drinking Bud Light and wearing women's clothes now.
So, but police went to the campsite and they collected everything. They collected everything that Danny had left behind, including, take a guess,
They found his cassette, like his, I don't know.
You got it. You fucking got
it. Of his music.
They found the tape. They found the tape. Yes.
Of his manifesto or whatever. Yeah.
And
I pay attention sometimes. I mean, I'm not going to remember any of this shit tomorrow, but I do pay attention.
I'm proud of you. You got it. But,
you know, so like I said, sometimes I do pay attention.
But the thing is they never listened to the tape.
Of course they didn't.
If they had, there
would have been. Wait, year was this? What year was this?
90.
1990. Yeah, they probably didn't know how to listen to it because everything was CDs then, right?
Oh, come on. The cops would have grown up with tapes.
You're missing my point.
Okay.
My point is that unless you had a car from the 80s or a boombox from the 80s, you had no way to fucking play a cassette tape.
Much like now, I don't even have a CD player or a DVD player for that matter.
Dude, I don't. I mean, I have a DVD player, which actually worked out good when I didn't have internet for like a week. But you know what, dude? You know what's the hardest part about that? Was like remembering how to work the fucking DVD player.
Damn.
Like how do DVDs work, dude? I'm used to just streaming shit and it starts, dude. I'm like, what is all this crap?
But they never listened to it. I mean, if they had, there everything that they would have needed would have been there
right
to close
there.
The case immediately. Yep. But in an effort to solve this case, Quiskly. He Quiskly did some mobberies.
dude, it's gonna be a whole T-shirt. It's gonna start with. It's gonna be mobberies. Quiskly.
Rapled.
just words that Bill makes up.
All the words.
Words that Bill makes up. What he fucking stammers through a line.
But in effort to solve the case quickly, Gainesville had been pinning the murders on the wrong guy. A man named Edward Humphrey. He was a problem child. He was rough around the edges. He had committed mobberies.
Mobberies, yes. That's a key factor.
And he was an outcast. And he had hideous scars on his face that looked like Heath Ledger's Joker's scars. And I'm serious. I'm not even kidding. If you Google him, and I've been starting to put like pictures up
somebody gave him the Irish smile.
No, that's not what happened, but that's what it looks like.
All right.
They
call that, it's Irish something. It's not smile.
But the scars that he had were a lot less interesting than the Joker's scars. He had gotten them in a bad car accident that he had been in. But I'm serious.
Do you want to know how he got these scars?
I'll post the pictures a few days after I release the episode, which is something I've started doing. And
so you have to go to it's X now. It's not even Twitter. It's X now.
Yeah, it's X.
So you have to go to X to see that shit
or Facebook. But
yeah, whatever.
But
I think we have more of a following on X.
Yeah, definitely. But
dude, that's weird saying that.
I'm just gonna call it Twitter, but he had also been arrested for assaulting his grandmother in Indian Atlantic, Florida.
Oh,
he's a Brevard boy, like we are.
Well, I still am. You live on the other side of the state now, but yeah,
I'm still a Brevard boy.
I know.
And by the way, it's Brevard.
Yes, it's Brevard.
It's not
Brevard. It's not Brevard.
Not Brevard. I keep hearing these podcasts and everything of people that don't live. Hell, even Florida Man on Florida Man got Brevard wrong. They called it Brevard.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, how can they call themselves that. Florida Men then? Like, seriously, dude. You have to know.
They're two counties over.
If you're gonna call yourself Florida, dude, if you're a Florida man, dude, you have to know the proper names
for
everything. It's Brevard.
Yeah. But I've heard that on so many
dude, you know, it's funny that you say that because I am going to digress again for just a second. I was listening to the radio and a guy was giving like I can't remember if it was a traffic report or weather, but no, it was traffic. He said there's an accident on Chiluda Road. I'm like, dude, you mean Chiliota? Because that's how it's pronounced. I mean, I know it's spelled weird, but it's Chiliota, not Choluda.
It's like people try to pronounce Kissimmee. They're like, Kissimmee.
Oh, fuck. Here we go again. So these two guys pull up to a Burger King.
Oh, God.
And they're arguing over where they are. Like, dude, we're in Kissimmee. No, and the other guy says, no, it's Kissimmee. No, it's Kissimmee. No, it's Kissimmee. And they pull up this Burger King. It's like, hey, can you tell us where we are? And the drive-thru lady goes, Burger King.
I love dumb one-off jokes like yep. that. I love
that. And, I'm great. Done. So let's finish this because, all right. Yeah.
All right.
I'm an idiot. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm an idiot. It is what it is.
So, but you know, he had been arrested for assaulting his grandmother in the Atlantic. Yeah. You know, and this was just 2 days after the last of two rolling victims had been found, and then he had just come to Gainesville for whatever reason. It was just wrong place, wrong time. I mean, he was released, and he was probably given a.
Oh wait, we're still talking about the red herring guy. Okay, yeah, I got you.
Yeah, he was eventually cleared of the murders, but his reputation had been tarnished by the accusation. You know, because he wore camo and he liked knives and all that stuff, and he was actually tried for the Ripper murders, and he had pled not guilty. But he was cleared, like I said, and in 1994 he went back to Brevard County and enrolled at the University of Central Florida and finished his degree. And he had done some bad things for which you know he was ultimately, you know, time served. And yeah. They dismissed the charges against his grandmother in Brevard County.
Dude, well, at least he didn't spend like half his life in jail for something he didn't fucking
yeah,
do.
I know. But there's an interview
like with, some people have.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an interview with Edward Humphrey, which we'll link in the notes, and it's an interesting read. I'm not going to read the whole thing. This episode's long enough as it is.
It is. Let's keep going.
So
I keep
back
digressing because you keep giving me shit to talk about.
So back to Danny Boy. He had now assumed a new identity of Jesse Lang. He stole another car and sped out of Gainesville to Ocala, which is about 40 miles south of Gainesville. There, he went to the Ocala Winn-Dixie.
The Winn-Dixie. No, yeah, dude, I swear to God, dude, it has to be called Winn-Dixie from now on.
Oh, I know.
Don't get it, because Winn-Dixie is just too good.
If you haven't listened to episode 3, go listen to it, because we're not going to digress on why Winn-Dixie is called Winn-Dixie. Just go listen to episode 3.
You said that the first time we called it Winn-Dixie, but yeah, it is what it is. Dude, Winn-Dixie is what it's called now. It'll always be Winn-Dixie in my mind.
Yep, that's a t-shirt too. The Winn-Dixie logo with Winn-Dixie.
Winn-Dixie. Fuck yeah, bro. Dude, I think Winn-Dixie might sue us, but whatever.
Well, they can't. We'll use the old logo. We'll use the old background. We'll use the old background and put Winn-Dixie on it. Because it was the old background when that ship with William Cruise went down.
Well, yeah. Dude, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I'm down. I'll work on it.
So, while forcing the store's manager at gunpoint to empty the safe, the store's bookkeeper called the police from a payphone in the front of the store. And police arrived as Danny started to pull out of the lot and a high speed chase began. But what he didn't realize was that there were lots of police in the area because they were nearby for a training event.
Dude, that, wrong place, wrong time.
That combined with the fact that he had picked peak shopping time on a Saturday to make this robbery.
Oh, God. And you're so telling me this guy was smart? Holy fuck.
I'm just saying he wasn't stupid. I didn't say he was a genius. But
all right, we'll argue that point later. But anyway, not the point. But moving on.
The high speed chase didn't last very long. He never even made it out of the parking lot. But they were like whipping around. Like there's like multiple cop cars pouring into this fucking lot.
He's like, "Fuck! I can't go that way. Fuck! I can't go that way. Fuck!"
And he crashed high into speed a tree
chase in a parking lot. And he crashed into a tree.
And the store manager walked right up to the car with several officers that had their guns drawn. And he's like, "That's him.
Yep, that's the guy."
But Rawling wasn't done. He
of course not.
He took off on foot and he ran to a nearby office building and tried to make ran through the front door of a nearby office building and tried to make a slick escape out the back door of the building, but of course, police were waiting for him.
They were waiting. Goddamn right they were.
And they got him. Can you imagine?
Because Florida cops know how to do their fucking job.
Unlike Dallas.
Yes.
So, but
anyway.
So 3 days. Oh God. Can you imagine that scene? It's like Danny Rawling just hauling ass. He's probably hasn't had a shower in like a week. And so he's just like,
dude, we don't even need dogs, dude. I can smell them from here.
Yeah. But he's running through this fucking office building. Everybody's wearing suits and all that stuff and everything. And then all of a sudden this fucking chucklehead runs through there. And you're just like, "My, hear me sing. I'm Danny the serial killer. I didn't gain the ripper, but they don't know it yet. So just fuck off and let me out the back door." Yeah.
Sorry, I can't sing for y'all right now, dude. I'm running from the police and I need to get out the back door. So can you point me to the back door, please?
Buy my cassette tape.
Yeah.
It'll be in the classified sections of the Florida Today.
Fuck, we are so old. We just totally fucking dated ourselves.
And if I'm lucky, I might be able to get the Orlando Sentinel too.
Yeah, the Orlando Sentinel I might be able to get a classified ad in there. Yeah. If not, dude, you can pick it up in BAM magazine. Like any club, any bar you go to is gonna have BAM magazine, dude, and you just like, dude, my cassette's for sale in the back of that too.
And if you wait about 30 years, you might be able to hear it on a podcast too.
Yeah, anything's possible.
What's a podcast? I don't know, but it's gonna happen.
Yeah. What's a podcast? Well, you know, I happened to be standing around when these two dudes were just like talking about shit. I decided not to kill them because they were dudes.
And I went to sneeze, but it came out podcast.
And these two dudes had the whole podcasting thing like 20 years, 30 years before podcasting was a thing. So yeah. Anyway, now that we've fucking rewritten here, let's carry on.
So, 3 days after Rawling's arrest on September 11, 1990, the Gainesville Ripper story was dropped on the front pages of newspapers all across the country for the first time.
It was H.H. Holmes. I know it. Dude, you know I'm never letting that go.
It was Ed Gein.
Yeah, and he made chili out of them. Yeah, but dude, you're totally missing the point.
I know.
No, you're not. No, you're not missing the point.
No, I'm playing the bit. I'm playing the bit.
I know.
So the community,
fuck.
The community of Gainesville was no longer under threat, but they didn't know it yet. They wanted to forget the horror of the gruesome week of that murder, but like I said, they had pinned these charges on Edward Humphrey. Edward was convicted on October 10th of the assault charges against his grandmother. And on that day, Rawling had sent his mother a Christmas card from the Marion County Jail where he was being held, awaiting an indictment for the Wood Ducky robbery and mobberies that he had committed prior to his arrest.
Fuck yeah. Wood Ducky and Mobberies.
I'm telling you, Mobberies is staying. I will not forget that because that's
awesome. I hope so, dude, because that's awesome. Yeah, fuck yeah, dude. That Mobberies is never going away. That's going to be the thing from now on. So I hope you people listening, and we love you listeners. I hope you're all right with it.
Mobberies.
Let us know in a comment.
So
let us know if you love it, if you hate it. If you hate it, say, no, don't say that anymore.
Well,
it's still going to be a t-shirt.
So,
and we have t-shirts now, don't we?
Well, I have one and you will have one, but
I mean, can like everybody else go get them too?
I think I could figure out how to do that.
Like put a link in. So where, like if people want the t-shirts, they can get them.
Yeah. We got to find a better way to do it because I paid $35 for mine. So we got to find a way to make that more cost effective.
All right. Well, we'll work on that. All right. So we may have merch available.
Right. But
anyway, damn it. I digressed again. Fuck being a goat ass.
So from the moment of his arrest, Rawling had passively accepted his fate and been totally cooperative with the police and prison authorities. But on January 1st, 1991, he revealed another side of his personality when, in a fit of anger, he ripped a toilet from its mounting and threw it across the day room at the jail.
Oh, well, that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's only held in by those two bolts, but those two bolts are and a wax ring, but that's usually pretty securely fastened.
Yeah, I mean, dude, it's waterproof. Mm-hmm. Waterproof is hard to beat.
But I wouldn't be surprised.
Unless you're like some fucking like action hero in a fucking movie and you can just do that shit.
I wouldn't be surprised if he loosened the bolts prior to doing that when nobody was watching.
Just to make himself look badass.
Yeah.
So he didn't get fucked in the ass.
Daddy smash!
Daddy smash!
So,
Oh, fuck. Daddy's fuck. All right, so, you kind of halfway got me on that one. That wasn't a full get; that was like a half get. But all right, go ahead.
So, believing there was a lot more to the Danny Rawling than initially was thought, his defense attorney Victoria Lisaralde. Holy crap! Did I get that one right? I think I did.
But it sounded right.
Yeah, she asked for psychological test and moved to withdraw the guilty plea on Rawling's armed robbery charges for the Wood Ducky.
Well, of course, because, you know, that's what you do.
But he hadn't said a word about the Gainesville Ripper murder, then why would he?
Well, yeah, because that's a one-way road to the fucking electric chair. That's a one-way road to old Sparky.
Sparky. But Edward Humphrey was still in custody when investigators discovered a cold case in Shreveport, Louisiana, that had striking similarities to the murders in Gainesville. On November 4th, 1989, William Grissom, age 55, his 24-year-old daughter, Julie Grissom, and his eight-year-old grandson Sean Grissom were killed in William's home in Shreveport.
Mm-hmm.
The police in Shreveport found that Julie Grissom's body had been posed in a similar position to some of the women killed in Gainesville. She also had tape residue on her body, and vinegar rather than soap was used to clean her body. Danny had raped her. And he wanted, you know, he was using vinegar to, you know, hopefully get rid of the DNA.
Yeah.
Scott Griffin.
And what year was this?
This was 1989. Remember when I said that he was 3 days, no call, no show at his job? When he got back and he made threats, it wasn't idle threats because he had just killed his first, he had just made his first three murders.
So that was this.
Yes.
All right. Right on. Gotcha.
Scott Grissom, the son of William Grissom, brother of Julie Grissom and father to Sean. He said that they were killed just a week after his wedding, on the first day back at work from his honeymoon to Julie.
Holy shit.
Not to Julie, but
anyway,
whoever his wife was, it didn't say.
Right.
So they tested the body fluids from the perpetrator in Shreveport and found that this, cum. Apparently vinegar doesn't get rid of DNA.
Yeah, cum doesn't get rid of jizz. You have to use bleach. Don't ask me how I know that.
Vinegar does, however, if you get like oven cleaner on your hands, pour some white vinegar on your hands. That'll cut it in a second.
You know why though, right?
It's because of the acids.
Because oven cleaner is a base. It's like, lie, dude. Lie is a base. Lie will burn the fuck out of you. You pour vinegar on it. If you pour water on it, it just burns worse. You pour vinegar on it, the acid neutralizes the base. But yeah, that's right. Why. But yeah, dude, cum is neither an acid nor a base, so vinegar will do nothing to it.
Right. So, they determined that this person had a type B blood. He called in the match to evidence in Gainesville, a revelation in the case, because Edward Humphrey had type A blood.
Oh. All right then.
So even though this Edward Humphrey guy
is not the
he's not the cream of the crop
of the community.
He's not a murderer. He's not a murderer.
But he's not the guy. Yeah. That's all right. Cool.
So the next step led to the discovery of the most significant link between the Danny Rowling and the Gainesville student murders. The task force reexamined every crime that had occurred in the area during the time of the murders. And when the robbery of the First Union National Bank on August 27, 1990, the day Krista Hoyt's body was discovered, it was found that the culprit had abandoned his campsite in the woods. And the Alachua County Police held his belongings in storage, and the items included bedding, a gun, a ski mask, a cassette tape, and a screwdriver.
Screwdriver, all right.
So they finally listened to the freaking tape.
Well, you know, dude, it probably took them that long to find a cassette player to listen to it on, but all right. Just saying.
I still had tapes in 1990.
So did I, dude. But also I had you know what else I had? I had a car from 1980 fucking six that had a cassette player in it.
All right.
Dude, I had no way to listen to cassettes other than in that car.
During that time, I had my Cougar that had a tape deck in it.
I know, yeah. But you know what I'm saying, though, dude? Seriously.
That Cougar was a cool car.
But seriously, dude. In 1990, things had just started going to CDs, dude, right? So, yeah, there could have been somebody that still had a cassette player in their car. But the
now,
time, dude, people were just like, what the fuck is this?
Now if you say my Cougar has a cassette had a cassette deck in it, you would think that a woman had a fucking tape player in between her legs.
How did I know you were going to go there?
It just came to me.
I knew you were. I didn't see. I wasn't going to go there.
But there.
Anyway, moving on. Let's finish this shit, dude. Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a long episode. But there they heard his manifesto in which he says his full name. Remember I emphasized his Danny Harold Rowling at the beginning of the episode? Yeah, they said he says his full name and in the manifesto. And you know, which I read, as well as the songs, and we're gonna play one, but not yet. Gotta let that anticipation build. And we'll play it when we get to the trial, which we're not far from.
Fuck, dude. I thought we were close to being done, man.
We're getting there. 23 out of 30.
I'm getting weary, man.
But another dagger came when a woman who knew Danny called Crime Stoppers. Cindy
Crime Stoppers.
Cindy Jurisich was on a trip through Florida, through the Florida Panhandle in August of 1990 when she heard the news report about a string of grisly murders. And they immediately made her think about a man from her Louisiana hometown church who used to spend time with her and her family. That man, Danny Rowling, had told her that one day he was going to leave Shreveport where they lived, and he said that one day I'm going to leave this town and I'm going to go to where the girls are beautiful and I can just lay in the sun and watch beautiful women all day. Well, Gainesville does fit that description.
It does. So does Brevard.
Yeah. Brevard. So does Tallahassee.
And so does pretty much any state on the coast of any city on the coast of Florida.
Especially if there's a major university there. Or a beach.
Or a beach, yeah. Dude, there are so many beaches on Florida.
Well, yeah.
Some are better than others.
But anyway. over the course of 3 days, police in Gainesville discovered the bodies of 5 college students, a man, and 4 women. 3 of the women had been raped. 1 had been decapitated. And all of them had been stabbed to death, and some were left in sexually provocative positions. The murders were eerily similar to 3 others that had occurred in Shreveport in November of 1989. And she thought of Rowling, who just a few months before the murders in their community happened, said something deeply disturbing to her husband, her then husband, Steve Dobbin.
Oh.
He'd come over every night for a while. And then one night, Stephen comes in and says, "This guy's got to go."
Row, row, Raggy.
Dobbin told Jurisich that Rowling had told him that he had a problem. Dobbin said, "What kind of problem?" Jurisich said that he told her husband at the time, he likes to stick knives in people.
Kind of like, Jurisich, you like telling me to stick knives in it until later? And
no, I'm using stick a knife in it. Stick a knife in it instead of saying put a pen in that.
I know, bro.
There's a really big difference between me saying that and somebody actually.
With you, bro. Fuck, man.
I know, and I'm playing the bit.
Alright.
Damn, you're dense sometimes.
No, I'm not dense. I'm playing the
dense bit. That's what it is.
All right, fine. I'm tired, bro. To quote our good friend Mark from Mental Illness Theater, I'm weary.
Weary. Well, we're almost done.
Well, okay. Let's get
25
there.
Pages to go.
I'm gonna shut up. Go fuck
yourself.
I'm kidding. Like, seriously, go fuck yourself, dude. We're stopping this one right now if there's 25 pages.
I'm kidding.
There's going to be, yeah, dude, if there's 25 pages left, there's going to be a part 2 to this because.
No, there are 6 pages left. And I'll get through them
quickly. All right, let's go.
Jurisich said that she dismissed the comments when she heard them because she didn't want to believe that Rowling could be responsible for the triple murders in Shreveport. But the news of the Gainesville murders haunted Jurisich, and in November in 1990, she decided to contact police on a hunch that Rowling might have been connected to the murders in both cities. "It would not let me rest," you know, she said. "One day I picked up the phone, I called Crime Stoppers, and I said, I think there's one guy y'all need to investigate, Danny Rowling."
Well, all right.
So, I mean, just a random freaking housewife, you know, just basically sunk the dagger into Danny's back.
A random person just cracked the case.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
but
fucking amazing. Love it.
Danny had already been convicted of the bank robbery at the time, as well as the wood ducky robbery and several other robberies and car thefts. So they already had him locked up, but all the DNA evidence that they had from the Gainesville murders combined with what was found on the Grissom family made him the prime suspect for the Gainesville murders. And he was formally charged with the Gainesville murders in 1992. Around this time, Rowling began corresponding with journalist Sandra London, who would become his fiance and helped him put together the book, The Making of a Serial Killer. And you can hear all about that in episode 69, Prison Tender.
Yes.
The episode right before this one. Because I'm not going to go through all that because it would add 30 minutes to this already really long story.
I know.
So,
and I'm already weary. So
we go into great deal about their air quote relationship. And well,
among others.
Yeah. Yeah. There was others that we covered in that too. And while he had pleaded not guilty, he used his fellow inmate, Bobby Lewis, as his mouthpiece to confess the murders. You can hear, like I said, if you haven't listened to Prison Tender yet, go listen to it.
Yes, please. I mean, you should have listened to it.
Yeah, you should have. It was a great episode, too. I loved that episode.
It was fun. I want to keep her. I do.
I know you do.
But I want her to be, I want her to do her own thing, dude. I don't want her to go.
Right.
Anyway, no, we talked about that.
And she doesn't have
the episode.
Yeah, she doesn't have a lot of time. So, to do another podcast.
No, I got that. Yeah, no, no. I know. I know. So I was.
In February 1994, just before the start of his trial, Rowling abruptly changed his plea to guilty. And you know, to determine the sentence, the jurors listened to the testimony from his mother, who recounted the abuse that Danny had received at the hands of James, his father, and from a psychiatrist who described an alternate personality of Rowling named Gemini, who drove him to his sadistic acts.
What? Come on now, dude. Really?
Do you actually know where Gemini comes from?
Gemini's what? The sign of the twins?
No. A demon.
No, I don't know that.
Okay. Danny loved the movie The Exorcist 3. And the demon
the worst movie of the Exorcist fucking trilogy.
The demon in that movie was named Gemini. So on top of everything else, he has shitty taste in movies too.
Dude, goddamn. Dude, really? No, dude. Because the demon, never mind. I don't even want to go into it.
So he claimed another alter ego named Yenad. Can you figure that one out? Yenad? Y-N-N-A-D?
No, I can't.
It's Danny spelled backwards.
Is it real? Oh.
Yeah.
Y-N-N-A-D. Yeah, I guess it is. All right. So he's obviously faking demonic possession to fucking get away, to get out of his fucking horrendous fucking crimes.
Yep. So among the evidence against Yenad.
Yenad. Nad being the operative part of this fucking.
And that's what I'm going to call him for the rest of the episode, too. Yenad.
Is Nad. No, so, just call him Nad.
All right, Nad. Among the evidence against Nad.
Because he's a ball sack.
Get ready. Because against Yenad, one of his songs from his tape was played. And I might add that this song was not done in Dublin.
It was not done in Dublin.
It's called Mystery Writer. Hit it.
She means Dublin. She means Dublin. Come on. All right, dude, I can't find it. Hold on, I'll find it. There it is. Play.
Black stallion, you bring a grim reaper. Dressed in snake hide, woven black leather. Mystery Rider, what your pleasure has the tender with a big cigar. Give me a whiskey, 'cause I'm a feeling a little risky. If that tin star's in town, well, you tell him I'm around. Mystery writer, what's your name? You're the killer, the victor, gone insane. Mystery writer, what's your name? Out on a windy, lonely, lonely street, to slinging 44s where hell they finally, finally meet. Fast as lightning, the two men will they draw. The outlaw he was, the last thing he ever saw. Mystery writer, what's your name? You're a killer, a drifter gone insane.
It's not a bad song.
No, it isn't. And I hate to admit the fact that it isn't a bad song from the complete piece of shit that this fucking human being is, but whatever, yeah. It is what it is.
However,
it's very fucking like, dude, it reminds me of shit like that came later, like way later, like when Johnny Cash redid Hurt.
Well, that what it reminded me of kind of was like House of the Rising Sun.
Yeah, it's there is a lot of that there too. I was listening to it on a dude. I'm pretty sure it's the same chords.
Oh yeah, the D minor, which is truly the saddest of all keys.
Yes. Yeah.
But the song, but if you listen to
what's
the lyrics,
that one called? Lick My Love Pump.
Lick My Love Pump. But if you listen to the lyrics and everything, he's literally talking about himself and what he's planning on doing.
Oh, I know, dude. I know. I got it.
But
anyway, not the point. Moving on, please.
But we're it's at the end of this episode. I have recorded a metal version of said song.
Because Bill does that shit.
which we're gonna play instead of our outro. And to be honest with you, as I was recording that song, as I was like putting this, I was like listening to it over and over again so I could learn it. And I was coming up with the drum beats and stuff like that, and I'm like listening to it. I'm starting to get this uneasy feeling in my stomach, like, you know, I it's just because I know who this is. Yeah. I know who's singing to me and playing guitar to me, and I know, and it's just like it's getting to me.
Yeah.
But I justified it. You know how I justified it?
No.
I justified it because Danny Rowling would hate my version of it.
Right on, bro. All right, then. Let's finish this, bitch.
All right. So.
Please, let's finish it, dude, because I am weary.
So, while in trial, Danny asked Sandra London to marry him in bold form.
Thought we weren't talking about that. Didn't we already cover that?
Yeah, but we didn't play the song.
Oh, shit. Now I got to play another song. All right. Yeah, I'm ready.
This one's only a minute. An acapella serenade, which we will play now. Hit it. It's only a minute.
Playing.
Rules say I have to give Mr. Rowling an opportunity to have a say. You have anything you want to say, Mr. Rowling?
Well, sir. Please, court. Could I address the court?
Sure. Say whatever you want to say.
Thank you. Anytime. I recall the day I first saw you. I reached out to say I love you. But it was hard to say I couldn't touch you. So tell me, baby, what were my words? All my tears run again.
Excuse me, Mr. Rollins.
Down
Mr.
the path Rollins. You choose
Mr. Rollins.
To follow.
Mr. Rollins.
So tell me, baby, what were my words? All my tears run together. What were my words? All my tears run together, baby. Just like rain.
Okay, you get one song and that's it, Mr. Rollins. We're here for sentencing.
Dude, at least the judge was nice. They go, all right, one song. That's all you get.
Yeah. But
holy fuck.
As good of a song as Mystery Writer is, that just kills Mystery Writer.
If they would have let him have a guitar, I bet it would have been better.
True, but
I mean, every song sucks fucking a cappella. I'm just saying. And dude, unless you have written the most amazing lyrics and melody line, any song fucking sucks. If you take the music away from any song, dude, I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
Any song and just listen to the vocal line, dude, it sucks. Every song does.
Did you hear that clip of an isolated vocal track from David Lee Roth on Running with the Devil?
Yes.
That was fucking hilarious.
I mean, it's like, dude, the fucking editing magic that they pulled off to make that shit sound good within the song was just amazing, dude.
The jury unanimously found Rowling guilty of first degree murder on all five counts in late March, and a month later he was sentenced to death. His appeals were exhausted and Rowling faced execution at Florida State Prison in
Sparky.
On October,
probably not Sparky though, right? Nah, he probably got lethal injection, didn't he?
Yep. But on October 25th of 2006, in his final moments, he regaled the 47 people crammed into the witness room with another one of his songs, a religious hymn, with the refrain, "None greater than thee, O Lord, none greater than thee." And his microphone was cut off and ending a life story just as twisted as any that could appear on a big screen.
Wow.
But
dude, you know what? You know what? I don't get about Lethal Injection. They put you on the gurney, they put you on the table with your arms out, right? And they fucking swab your skin with alcohol.
Yeah,
so you wouldn't want to get an infection. Yeah,
but dude,
I'm about to die. Who gives a fuck about an infection? Just stick the goddamn needle in me and get it the fuck over with.
Yeah. So he did, and good riddance. And
fuck yeah, I wish old Sparky had got him, because that would have been a much better fucking ending to this story. But whatever, it is what it is.
Sparky is waiting.
dude, if I ever snap and go on a fucking killing spree, dude, I'm gonna choose old Sparky just because I know Sparky's waiting.
Some people have chosen the electric chair. Doesn't happen very often, but it has happened. But so he did.
I just want to do it just to fucking ride the lightning and fucking feed the old Sparky.
So he did, and good riddance. But as long as this episode was, you may have forgotten that Danny Rowling was the inspiration for the Scream movie franchise. in marketing.
No, dude, we never even brought that up. How do we forget?
We didn't bring it up. I'm assuming that most of the people that are listening to this episode have already heard other episodes about Danny Rowling.
Did he call him up like, "Hey, Sydney, what's your favorite scary movie?"
No,
he didn't do that. Dude, how is that inspiration? Oh,
hold
it's
on.
He killed college kids.
Well, I'll get there. But first I want to say there was this, I didn't use any documentaries on this, but looking into it, there was like a documentary that was like an hour and a half long and I started watching it, but it was a fucking Ghost Hunters episode. It wasn't Ghost Hunters themselves, but it was something like that. And,
did you hear that? Oh my God, like, there's nothing there.
I watched a preview of it. I watched a preview of it and it said, you know, it had them like that they're out at night and everything. It's like, I believe that we are in contact with the ghost of Danny Rowling. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
There, I have my ghost scanner. I'm scanning for ghosts. Oh my God. Did you hear that? What was that? Dude, did you get that on infrared?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
So I'm like, you know what?
That's every ghost hunter, fucking whoever thinks they're ghost hunters. That's what they do. They hold up some piece of fucking technology that they claim is something, and then they go, "Shh, did you smell that?"
There was one of these ghost hunter stories.
Oh, you know, didn't hear it.
Episodes about where they went to the area where Bell Gunness's farm was.
Oh yeah,
and
I want to go there.
Well, I don't think you can. The farm's been demolished, and I think they had permission to be there. But
dude, we are number 42 on the top 100 podcast. Dude, we're in the top 50. I think we could get permission to go there
on good pods. But
yeah, whatever that is, whatever that means. Who knows what that means?
It's like a podcasting social media page. But
42, dude, we're the top 50.
Yeah.
And we've only been doing this for a fucking little over a year. We're in top 50. I'm ecstatic about that.
I am too. That was cool. That was a very awesome email.
And we're also big in Suriname. So
yep, we are.
but if you believe all that shit you see on the internet, we're number 42 on somebody's countdown. And we're big in Suriname. We're like top 10 in Suriname.
Yeah.
So thank you, Suriname. We love you.
But
still,
they're out there in the middle of the night and everything. And this, the guy is like, and I heard a clip of this on another podcast, like Bell Gunness episode where they were, ragging on this particular episode. And they're like, I feel like Bell Gunness is here. And Bell Gunness wasn't even killed there. She wasn't.
Yeah. Why would she be there?
She fucking ditched. She wouldn't be there. But
let's do this like I said, dude. I'm not gonna do it now. This guy's gonna be another episode.
This guy's like I know you're here, you evil woman.
Dude, we're gonna have to do a Patreon episode where we destroy all these fucking ghost hunter fucking cunts, dude. Seriously.
I'm in.
Yeah, dude. It'll be Patreon because, you know.
Yeah, because our listeners. Yeah.
No, dude. It has to be Patreon so we can't get fucking like demonetized for it because all the fucking cunts we're about to make fun of are gonna go copyright strike. Take that down. You know, dude, it'll never happen. It has to be on Patreon.
Right. So in March of 1994, struggling actor and screenwriter named Kevin Williamson became engrossed in a news program about a drifter who terrorized the town of Gainesville, Florida with the murders of five
college
students.
Was it his brother, Kevin?
No, it wasn't his brother. That would have been a twist, though.
Yeah, it would have been great, wouldn't it? Fuck, dude.
God, his own brother becomes a fucking movie producer
and makes a movie loosely based on him. Dude, yeah. How fucking badass would that have been? That would have been a perfect ending to this story. No lie.
But so, you know, five college students over 3 days in August of 1990s. You know, he got spooked out about that. So he hammered out the screenplay for what became Scream, the successful 1996 slasher flick that was celebrated for its knowing winks at horror film tropes, breathing new life into the genre, which it did.
Yes, thank you, Wes Craven. I love you, bro.
But while Scream provides plenty of slashing and scares, in the end, its story of Sydney and the masked killer only bears a passing resemblance to that of Danny Rowling, the Gainesville Ripper, whose life of violence and despair would present a difficult task for any screenwriter to depict.
Say, dude, I don't.
But you know what? I disagree with that. Because
I don't see any connections between that, dude, because I mean,
well, it was simply because the guy went through, I mean, you know, he could have gotten the same inspiration if he had been like, you know, like read about Ted Bundy when it actually happened, you know, but so it was loosely based on it. You know, he got the idea after hearing the story about
very, very loosely.
Yeah,
based.
Very, 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 very loosely.
Because I mean, dude, Rowling didn't do anything. He didn't call his victims ahead of time to torment him. I mean, dude, that's like, I mean, like saying that, dude, that's just somebody trying to fucking hop on somebody's fucking.
And you know what? And I
bandwagon there. You know what I mean?
He was just attaching his name to it, but yeah.
Seriously, dude, I mean. That whole movie was Wes Craven through and through, the first one. And whether the script was written by somebody who may have been influenced by what he did, it was nothing like what fucking Rowling did.
I think he just I heard about this story, so
I want to attach it to, so you know. But dude, even if the guy that wrote the script, dude, yeah, Wes Craven still had the final thing, dude, and it was nothing like that.
No.
Because Wes Craven made that movie to make fun of all the horror tropes of the movies that he used to make.
Exactly.
That was the point of that movie. It had nothing to do with this motherfucker.
Oh, I know.
Stop.
All right,
I'm done.
Thanks a hell of a lot for listening. We appreciate the hell out of it.
Yes.
Oh God! Follow us on socials. We're Twitter, Facebook, and our website is
X now. X, not Twitter.
X.
Yeah.
And our website is ckcbpodcast.com. And we appreciate the hell out of you listening and everything. You know, if you have an account on Good Pods, follow us there. I think I'm going to start listening to my podcast from Good Pods and everything, just because it's like a social media for podcasts. So,
and we're number 42 there.
Yep.
Out of 100.
At least this past week. But if you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us, tell an enemy. And like I said before, instead of us playing our normal outro music, we're going to send you out with my metal version of Danny Rowling's song, Mystery Rider. And it'll also be available on YouTube, Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify, iHeart, wherever you get your music from, along with all of my other music. And until next week, later!
Cheers, everybody.
Your name. Welcome, stranger, to the Silver Dollar Bar. Ooh, it's your pleasure. Pass the tender with a big cigar. You give me a whiskey, 'cause I'm feeling a little freaky. If that 10 stars in town, well, you tell him I'm around. Mystery writer.